at the stage now where approximately 1 in 6 couples face fertility challenges. So that is far more common than previous generations. And the reasons for it are complex and interrelated. We have so many onslaughts in our modern society that are just a mismatch to fertility. Being super stressed out throws off your hormones. Not sleeping well throws off your hormones. Getting too much blue light exposure and not being out in the sun first thing in the morning, like Huberman style, right? Like that throws off your hormones. We have so much more chemical exposure than we had before. And that's coming from many places, cosmetics, plastics, things contaminating the food supply, pesticides, and so on and so forth. And many of those end up being endocrine disruptors. So mess up your hormones. And then our food quality. I mean, a lot of people are not really eating the best quality diet. Doing so is in a lot of ways kind of a privilege. It's expensive to get whole foods that are not like full of garbage. Like it just is what it is. So I think all of those things combined definitely play a role. We're also, of course, often delaying having children until later on, and that can play a role as well. So you add it all up, and it kind of is a recipe for fertility problems. And it's not just on the female side. I mean, sperm quality as a whole has been going down population-wide for decades now, to the point that sperm quality guidelines for what is like accepted as like normal has declined over the years. So we used to aim for higher, and now our like new normal is quite a bit lower. It's like 5% morphology or something insane. So I think all of that ends up factoring in. And then I'll throw in one more: diet culture. So especially for women, our hormones are very closely tied to nutrient adequacy. And that includes not just like micronutrients, but calories, protein, fat. And so when we have decades of people eating a low fat diet or going from diet extremes, especially if that you go on a low calorie diet, I mean, you cut calories by as little as 25%. And that starts throwing off the menstrual cycle and can cause ovulation to cease. Obviously, if you're not ovulating, you can't get pregnant. And traditionally, like ancestral societies, they would actually, you know, you would see a variation in birth rate based on if it was a season of abundance or a season of scarcity. Or like some areas have like a dry season and a rainy season. Like the rainy season, everything's growing. You get a great harvest. People have enough food and you see more babies. Dry season, when there's not enough food, like fertility slows. So we see that for different reasons nowadays, like self-imposed food restriction. But that's a really big problem that I see a lot in practice, is just significant under-eating and like years of undereating.
Yeah. Just on that point, I remember there was kind of a overall confusion around fasting, where like I was fasting at a point when I was living in LA. I wouldn't eat until like noon. And I would do this all the time and not according to my cycle whatsoever. I wasn't paying attention. And honestly, I was feeling awful. I was feeling, and I think what I liked about the feeling was just this, I was feeling thin the first half of the day for the most part, where I'm like, ooh, I'm going to work out. I'm going to just have a bulletproof coffee and I'm going to fast until 12. And I liked aesthetically how I was looking, and I liked the feeling of being lighter. Mm-hmm. And, at the time I wasn't trying to get pregnant. However, I know that if I had continued that absolutely would have been a factor in me not being able to get pregnant, because I was not nourishing my body. I would find myself like starving at points, yet when I was starving, I wasn't actually eating nutrient-dense food to satiate mm-hmm. my hunger. I was probably eating food that would cause a glucose spike. Like, it was just all sorts of funky. And so I'm glad you brought that up, because I do think that, you know, in this day and age, when we are able to see other people's lives, their bodies, their lifestyles, we automatically think that we should be trying those and looking like that. And the reality is that everyone's body is very, very, very unique and different. However, we all do need these nutrients that are going to help our brain work better, help our gut work in a way that is just affecting most systems of the body, our hormones, et cetera. So yeah, I definitely went through that. And I'm curious if someone like me who was fasting and kind of restricting in a weirdly subconscious way, I don't know if I was like consciously restricting, I just got into the habit of like not yeah. eating enough food. So how would you, if someone is wanting to get pregnant and or prep their body for fertility, how would you go from that restricting, maybe fasting, to incorporating more nutrients?
Yeah, it's a great, great question. And I think we have to remember, like, most of the research we have on fasting is done in men. So while we have all sorts of extensive and very compelling reasons to fast for improved longevity and like blood sugar balance and all these things, weight loss, most of that research is in men, and they're not as sensitive to nutrient inadequacy as women are. Plus, like, the whole way in which fasting is done, because it's not always harmful in all cases, I'll throw that out there. But the way in which it's done most commonly, where you delay your first meal, that's really tricky for hormones, because you start the morning with already a cortisol surge of the morning, and then that cortisol ramps up even more. By the time you have chosen to eat that first meal, your cortisol is like through the roof. I mean, when I've experimented with intermittent fasting with the version of the delaying breakfast, I like could literally, now I'm a pretty sensitive person, so I'm like really in tune with my body, but I could feel like aching in my like lower rib area, which is like right where your adrenals are, right? It was like my adrenals were like screaming wow. out, like, what the F? I'm also fairly wow. sensitive to caffeine. So for me, it was like doing a bulletproof coffee or something. I mean, I can't be a coffee drinker. So that was like, no, this doesn't feel right. I feel like when I wake up in the morning, I want to eat food. Yes. And in fact, you know, I'll get to the fertility portion, but I just want to throw this out there, because I feel like people go to intermittent fasting because they think it's the only option for like weight loss or maintaining like a lean body type or something like that. There's actually been data where they look at, there's been a study in women with polycystic ovarian syndrome where they do have them intermittent fast. And now these are women in this particular cohort who may benefit from a little bit of weight loss, but they didn't restrict their calories, which is interesting. Mm. And they front loaded their food. So they ate all their food between 8 and 4. And dramatic improvement. It was a fairly small study, but a really big improvement. But that's not the way most women are intermittent fasting. The other thing is, there's been some other studies where they've done similar, like front loading the food. So most of your calories and food at breakfast, a slightly smaller lunch, and the smallest meal is dinner, or the reverse, small breakfast, moderate lunch, large dinner. You see huge metabolic benefits in those who are getting the larger breakfast, even with calories, macros, everything kept equal. So when we think sort of long-term about like both hormonal health and like body composition, because it's not wrong to have body composition goals, what we see is that eating, particularly breakfast, particularly a protein-rich breakfast, is a way to often achieve fairly similar results as intermittent fasting, but with less collateral damage that you see down the line. So for somebody who has been intermittent fasting for a while and wants to like transition to like a more fertility supportive approach, I would it's tricky because sometimes your hunger cues are like completely thrown off for a while from not eating breakfast. So you may have to be sort of kind to yourself during the transition phase.
Sure.
But try to have something to eat in the morning. And I actually recommend within 30 to 60 minutes of waking up, and not coffee, because that'll give you a huge cortisol surge, like actually some food. And not everybody wakes up very hungry, particularly if you've been doing IF for a long time. So maybe it's a small snack. Maybe you have like some leftover meat from the night before and you have a few bites. Maybe you have a little bit of cheese. Maybe you have a little Greek yogurt, maybe a small handful of nuts, something that has some protein and caloric density to just tell your body, like, metabolically, we're waking up, we're breaking the fast. And then, you know, go along with your morning for a bit until your full appetite kicks in to have breakfast. Mm-hmm. And you'll probably just have to take baby steps getting to the point where you wake up actually ready to eat a meal. But that's fine as long as your body is getting like a little bit of nourishment. And eventually aiming in the direction of getting most of your food intake, not most, but like a good half of your food intake or more in those morning hours, and sort of tapering off later in the day, metabolically, that's much better for our everything. It's better for our cortisol levels. It's better for our blood sugar and insulin levels. If you get those two in check, that's better for your reproductive hormone levels as well. The last thing you want to do is be like going to sleep with a really, really full stomach, you know, with a blood sugar surge. It's not the time biologically when your body needs the energy. If you want to sort of think of us in hunter-gatherer sort of scenario, you need the energy during the daytime when you're up and at them and doing things, and at night you don't need as much of that energy. So I'm not opposed to people having a snack or something if you're hungry before bed, like by all means go ahead, but these large, dense, heavy meals really close to bedtime just metabolically are not the best idea, at least on a consistent basis. You know, every once in a while, no big deal, but every day doing that can be problematic. And what I often see is with intermittent fasting is people will just starve themselves for half the day, and then you're so famished that it's just anything goes, and you're just snacking and eating like without much regard to what you're eating, because your body is in a starvation state and just wants the energy. Like, it's not a willpower thing. It's like you didn't set yourself up for success, versus the protein-rich breakfast really satiates and really helps with your appetite, your blood sugar balance. It's more about like biological systems driving you to eat than it is a willpower, weak mental state sort of a situation. So that fueling right early on, I can go on and on. Huge benefits.
Yeah. Thank you so much for tuning in to Morning Microdose by Almost 30. We hope you enjoyed waking up. As always, we encourage you to take what resonates and leave the rest. If you enjoyed this trip, tune into the full episode on the Almost 30 podcast. All episode information can be found in the show notes.
Make sure to subscribe, and if this becomes a part of your morning routine, be sure to share it with a friend. We have new inspiring doses Monday through Friday. Follow us on Instagram at Morning Microdose, and follow Almost 30 at Almost 30 Podcast.
Thanks for listening. We'll see you in the vortex.